Today on Straight Talk Africa, Ugandan elections. We also mark 15 years of covering Africa, from political upheavals to tragedies to major causes for celebration. Straight Talk Africa is right here with you. On the eve of Uganda's elections, we talk politics. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Esther Githui Ewart in Washington, D.C. It's Wednesday, February 17th. In a moment, we'll be going to Shaka Ssali live at WBS Television in Kampala, Uganda. But the stakes are high in Uganda as the nation prepares to vote in presidential and parliamentary elections tomorrow, February 18th. Despite 30 years of relative stability, many Ugandans are concerned about the state of democracy in their country. Previous campaigns have been characterized by intimidation of the opposition from the government of President Yoweri Museveni, and some of those accusations are surfacing again. VOA's Paul Ndiho has more.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has ruled the East African country for over three decades. Now he's on the ballot for the fifth time, running against seven other candidates as the choice of the ruling National Resistance Movement Party. President Museveni took power in 1986, and nearly two decades later, in 2005, he changed the constitution to end presidential term limits. A report on campaign financing released in January by the Alliance for Campaign Finance Monitoring states that Uganda's long-time leader has spent more than $7 million on his 2016 presidential bid in just 2 months. The report also notes that the 71-year-old incumbent has spent 12 times more money than his top two rivals combined. President Museveni has come under fire by his critics, who say that he's spending taxpayers' money for personal use. But Museveni's camp dismisses those claims. Political observers believe the president may be facing his stiffest competition ever from his long-term rival Kizza Besigye and former Prime Minister Patrick Amama Mbabazi. Dr. Kizza Besigye, the Forum for Democratic Change candidate whose fortunes declined between 2011 and 2015, has made a remarkable comeback onto the national stage for his fourth attempt at the presidency. Besigye has drawn mammoth crowds throughout the campaign season in district after district, repeating his campaign slogan of defiance, not compliance. Unlike President Yoweri Museveni, Besigye's supporters are spontaneously offering him campaign contributions. I recently caught up with him on a campaign trail in western Uganda, and he told me that unlike previous elections, ordinary people are funding his campaign. Despite the enthusiasm of Besigye's supporters, it's important to note that Mr. Museveni has defeated Besigye in three elections, in 2001, 2006, and 2011. The third major presidential candidate is former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi of the independent Go Forward Party. He has performed better than expected during the campaign season. Initially, assumptions were made that Mbabazi was one of those privileged figures that rode on Museveni's court trails and who once stepped out of Museveni's shadow would fade away, unable to flourish independently of the president. Other presidential contenders include Abed Bwanika, who is running for the third time, representing the People's Development Party, retired Major General Benon Biraro of the Uganda's Farmers Party, Venancius Bariamureba, a former Vice Chancellor of Makerere University, Joseph Mabilizi, and Maureen Chalia Walube, the honorary female candidate. Pundits say that there is a lot of anger in Uganda, tied to the way the political process has been managed so far, and that the population is watching closely to see if the upcoming elections are free and fair. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
All right, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. We'll keep it here in the studio until we're able to connect with Shaka in Uganda. And in the studio, I'm joined by Morrison Rwakakamba and also Professor Suleiman Yang. Welcome to the Straight Talk Africa. Probably I start with you, Professor Nyang, and give me an overview of what you think is going to happen tomorrow, because tensions are high, but also stakes are high. And there are three or two key presidential candidates here, and they're hoping to get the top seat after tomorrow's polls. What's your view?
Well, I think the election tomorrow is a trying one. There are skeptics who don't believe that the transition many of the opposition people expect to happen is not going to happen, because the status quo is going to be reinforced because of the number of advantages. There are three points we have to take into account with regard to President Sudan and his ruling party. After 30 years of power, they have established themselves in a way none of the political parties or leadership in Uganda.
Professor, I understand we have a little technical issue there. Let's go to Mariama, who is our social media reporter. Mariama, welcome.
Well, thanks, Esther. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding and passionate feedback we've received from our audience through social media on our question of the week, which asks, who do you think will win Uganda's presidential elections and why? Here is a letter of the week that responded to that question.
Patricia Namdi from Kampala in Uganda writes, President Yoweri Museveni is going to win the elections. This is based on his great support in the rural areas. The majority of the voters come from such areas, and yet the opposition hasn't managed to convince the people of the need for change.
Let's now turn to our Facebook followers and go to Macham Chunize from Nairobi in Kenya, who writes, Dr. Kizza Besigye will win no matter what Museveni does. He is the brightest star and most popular and loved presidential candidate for Ugandans. Good luck to the majority of Ugandans who are yearning for change. Another comment comes from Alex Ndida Beitu from London in UK, who writes, Besigye will win the race because his supporters have grown massively. They genuinely love him, as we have seen in his rallies. Unlike Museveni's supporters, who have declined in numbers, and those remaining just support him because of money, fear, and intimidation. Well, let's stay with our Facebook followers and go to another comment from Gabriel Jirange in Katesh, Tanzania, who writes, Yoweri Museveni will win again because of his strategies. He can use military police and other government machinery to win the presidential seat. We have no democracy in Africa. We are only singing democracy, but we are not practicing it. Well, whether it's support for incumbent President Yoweri Museveni or any others in the opposition, passions are running very high in Uganda, and understandably so. It's election year, just as it is right here in the United States. Social media has been a new and completely different platform, allowing anyone to speak their minds. Esther.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction. And we'll welcome you back to Straight Talk Africa here in Washington, D.C. I'm joined by Professor Suleiman Yang of Howard University and Morrison Rwakakamba, Merit Scholar and Fellow at the Harvard University. Also via Skype, Moses Hisa, a columnist with the Uganda Observer and a PhD candidate at Northwestern University. Moses, let me turn to you via Skype first and give me your thoughts on what is going on. You've had a little bit of what's going on the social media. What do we expect tomorrow after the voters go to the polls?
Hi, Esther, and good evening to all the viewers across the continent. It's a tense time in the country, Uganda, right now. As we go into the polls tomorrow, There is high anticipation. There is a heightened sense of desperation across the political divide. What I gather from the ground is that the leading opposition candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye, has been able to rally the population for change, and this has generated a lot of paranoia and desperation on the part of the incumbent President Yoweri Museveni, and the state machinery is quite on the tenterhooks. We've had some rather, scary statements coming from the head of the police, the Inspector General of Police, who recently made rather uncalled for statements. All this has added to a charged and poisoned mood, and it's not very clear what will happen after the polls are cast tomorrow. But we wait and see. Part of the problem, comes with having a leader that has stayed in power far too long, such that the stakes become so high. Him leaving power is a matter of life and death, and those who are struggling to wrestle power from him are also doing it with a lot of enthusiasm. We have had very, very charged crowds following Dr. Kizza Besigye and showing that the country is desperate for change. They can't just stand anymore the rule of General Museveni, which, as we know, has become rather corrupt and rotten and regressive in many ways, Esther.
I think perhaps I should just turn to Morrison Rwakakamba here in the studio. Morrison, what's your reaction to Moses' views on what's expected tomorrow and some of the comments he's made?
Thank you, first of all, Esther, for hosting me. And glad to be here with Professor Nyang and listening to Moses Kisa, who is a colleague who writes for The Observer back in Uganda. Well, first of all, this is a historic moment that we are hosting yet again as a country an election in a multi-party democracy back home in Uganda. And the contestation that is happening, between the NRM, between the FDC and other actors, including Chad Gya, who is, a lady standing for president, that variety shows that Uganda, in a way, has moved further to, entrench and deepen democratic practices. So all these disagreements and engagements, for me, and the ferment of information and the discussion that are going on shows me that as a country, in spite of the disagreements, we are moving further to be able to elect our leaders. About this perceived, that NRM is unpopular, that President Museveni, because he has been in power for quite a number of years, is unpopular, is not necessarily based on evidence. What we need to know is that actually NRM is a mass party. The National Resistance Movement, it's a mass party, and it runs retail politics, house to house, and most of, from urban areas, from trading centers up to rural areas, and its major base is where people are, the communities, and it is really extremely, very strong. All these other parties, like the FDC and others, are essentially, first of all, urbanites, based in urban areas, that's their strong base, and trading centers. And once you go down there into the villages, into the rural, they absolutely have no support, and that's why, by the way, Esther, they have consistently...
Yes, we'll give you more chance to talk about this. Professor Nyang, let me turn to you, because you heard what Moses said via Skype and also Morrison here in the studio. Before we go to my colleague Shaka in Kampala, what's your reaction? Because tensions are high, the stakes are high, and you followed Uganda's politics for years. What do you expect? What's your view?
Well, I think there are comparative elections across Africa. I think what is happening in Uganda now is very much like what happened in Senegal during the time of Abdou Diouf, when you have the opposition groups were so mobilized. The case in Uganda is whether the opposition groups will work together against President Museveni. If they go on their separate way, then Museveni might win the election because they didn't come together like they did in Senegal. In Senegal, that's why the Senegalese example is very primary. Then you go back to Liberia. The lady candidate bring back the experiences of the president of Liberia today because, you see, you have a woman running for the presidency and she won against the men after a difficult time. So I think the Senegalese model with Abdou Diouf
could happen in Uganda, but it depends on two things, in my opinion. If President Museveni is convinced that his people are not happy with him, and then the political opposition must give him the exit without any kind of recrimination and conflict in the country, like the opposition did to Abdou Diouf in Senegal. Are the opposition leadership ready for that kind of exit? If that didn't happen, and they're not so organized, then based on the analysis I'm hearing, that the rural people support him, but the urban people don't like him, and the urban people are most affected by misrule than by the rural people.
So the question then comes to you, Moses, again there in Northwestern University. You talk about the rural people having more, you know, actually supporting President Museveni. Let me just finish and then I'll give you a chance. And the people in the urban area supporting FDC. But like Professor says, the opposition didn't form like a coalition, you know, to be able to kind of have a united front against the incumbent. And so you feel strongly that the opposition might be able to take the seat tomorrow. But what if the incumbent does? How is this going to play out? Do we expect some more drama, some chaos like we've seen in other countries? What is your expectation, Moses?
Well, Esther, my sense is that whether the opposition combined efforts or not is not the ultimate definitive determinant of the outcome of the election. The opposition could come together and still other you know, institutional and structural factors work against them. My understanding of elections in Africa is that a fraudulent election tends to depend on three things. One, the extent of bribery that the incumbent party and candidate can engage in. And two, the extent of intimidation that can be pursued. And three, what happens on polling day in terms of miscounting and fiddling with the votes. And the third factor is the most important because it raises the issue of the competence and credibility of the body charged with managing the elections, which is the Electoral Commission. Now, in Uganda, that is a major, major factor. There is a big credibility question mark on the current Electoral Commission headed by Dr. Badru Chigundu, which many people believe, many Ugandans believe, that it is neither independent nor is it competent enough to deliver a free and fair election.
All right, the opposition, Moses, I'll give you a chance. I'll be able to connect with Shaka now. And I'm sure you're all interested in debate, talking about the debate that happened on Saturday, which was quite an eye-opener. Now we go live to Shaka Sali, who is standing by in WBS TV in Kampala. Good evening, Shaka. Shaka, can you hear me?
Thank you so much. Here with me, of course, is my co-host, Peter
Thank
Kibazo.
Thank you so much.
Host here of Face Off is my and Issues at Hand program.
Thank
Good
you,
evening,
Shaka.
Peter.
Thank you, Shaka. And it is evening here, Esther, in Kampala, a very hot one at that. And good evening, my friend Morrison in the Washington studio, and he's and Professor Nyang. Greatly honored to host Shaka, or to be co-host to Shaka this evening. And we'll go straight first. Shaka, we are celebrating 15 years of Straight Talk Africa.
Mm-hmm.
15 years of Straight Talk Africa going around Africa. It comes a very important time when Uganda has an election that happens tomorrow. I need to come to you straight, Shaka. You've covered Africa, you've interviewed African presidents over the 15 years, interacted with them. What is your experience with the elections around Africa, with the interaction with African presidents? When do they say it's tick off time?
I think that, well, first of all, again, thank you so much, Peter, obviously, for co-hosting with me here in Kampala. And I have to say, that, again, I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to interact with you on this election eve in our mother country, Uganda. You know, having hosted Straight Talk Africa for the last 15 years. I have to say that I have had the opportunity to see the democratic sort of democratic process really developing in the sense that there was a time when we just started, all we were covering for the most part, we were talking about liberation struggles. We're talking about Rwanda. We're talking about Sudan. Now we have Sudan and South Sudan. Mm. We talk about Burundi. We talked about countries like Sierra Leone, Liberia, you name it. Mm. DRC. We're pretty much covering, you know, armed struggles, really. But over the last 10 or so years, we've seen some kind of remarkable, I think, progress, in the sense that if you go to West Africa, for example, you can see that as far as the continent is concerned, they are probably number one in terms of, in fact, holding credible elections. And then they are followed by SADC countries. True. In Southern Africa. And then, of course, the ones that frankly come behind is Central and East Africa, not to mention the northern part of the continent.
Shaka, I need, as you reflect on the 15 years, to tell me, what is the turning point for those countries? Ghana, for example, had very much a similar situation as Uganda. You have a leader that comes in as a liberator, but at some point decides it's cut off time and decides to pass on. You have Liberia that falls apart completely and then recovers from the ashes and becomes a model that is admirable in Africa. What is it that they are that is not East Africa?
You know, when you talk about Ghana, for example, they were very lucky to have had Fright Lieutenant John Jerry Rawlings,
who
retired, but certainly not tired. A very good friend of mine, actually, for many, many years. Mm. And you also have to look at the Ghanaian diaspora. Mm. They have a huge Ghanaian diaspora that is very powerful in terms of influencing events back at home in Ghana. And the leadership in Ghana was able to work together with the Ghanaian diaspora. And of course, a lot of Ghanaians also, when it comes to education, they are relatively better educated. We forget, by the way, that they regained their political independence back on March 6, 1957, my friend, under the Osage for himself, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. So I think they are in a totally different league. They have been able to sort themselves out because, in fact, it is one of the few countries on the African continent where parties have actually been, have been actually succeeding in each other at State House, Osu Castle, when it used to be Osu Castle. You have, for example, a president representing the NDC party, and then you have the NPP. You know, one service said, 8 years, and when you go for someone trying to get a first term after the president in that party has won, has actually been in office, you find that the party in opposition actually wins the election.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Shaka, I need to come closer home. Mm. Tanzania has been changing, possibly within the same party, but there's been move over from one government, from one leader to another to another. Kenya has had pitfalls. Aren't those lessons enough for next door neighbors, Rwanda and Uganda?
I think Tanzania, when it comes to the presidency,
yes,
you could perhaps accurately say that at that level, there is democracy. Because when you look back, you're talking about three former presidents.
True.
Who are now living
one of
in
whom
Tanzania.
Is here to monitor elections
that
in Uganda.
That is correct, Ali Hassan Mwinyi. Mm. And then when it comes down to, the parliamentary level and what have you, you still have a lot of problems there. And when you go to Zanzibar again, which is part of Tanzania, you have incredible problems there. Because in fact, as we talk, the last election was illegally annulled, perhaps because, as far as the evidence is concerned, the opposition party, CUF, had actually won. And now they are calling for, a sort of a new election of sorts. And of course, the opposition party, going perhaps to maybe not participate in it, really, because they don't think that they can get any different results.
Before we possibly come to Uganda or hand pose us back to Esther, I need to ask you, Shaka, 15 years of Straight Talk Africa, I have been checking today, you haven't hosted the Ugandan president. He's been a president for all that period.
I think you're wrong. In fact, the last time I hosted him on Straight Talk Africa was back in, I believe, in the summer of 2002.
Okay, not yesterday.
That was Straight Talk Africa, but that has to be the last time that, in fact, he has granted me an interview.
Is that because you haven't invited him, or is that actually what has been on social media around Kampala, that there is actually bad blood between yourself and His Excellency in Kampala?
I don't know anything about that, really, bad blood. When you go to the social media, you expect citizen journalism to say whatever they want. Mm. I don't think that the situation is like that. It seems to me that each time at least we have tried to approach him, to have him on the show, he has had other prior commitments.
And engagements.
Mm-hmm.
Shaka, Uganda cracked a first within East Africa. In spite of our teething democracy or the absence of it, you came in here to host a presidential debate, the first of its type. Your reflections on that?
An incredible experience, Peter. I don't know whether, in fact, it's the first time, because the last time I checked, I thought that your television station itself, many, many years back, actually did something of the sort.
We actually attempted one. I was the moderator of one, but not all the presidential candidates showed up. Only two of them did show up. So this one was a classic one, because all of them showed up, and all of them were in front of the media. And for me, it's an experience unimaginable.
You know, one thing I can say is that I think holding that debate was a significant positive step in the right direction. Because for the first time, Peter, at least in the history of the democratization process of Uganda,
yes,
the political playing field was leveled at that stage for the 4 hours. You saw that the president, for example, followed the rules and procedures and what have you. You know, there was humility, there was interaction, there was handshaking, and you name it. And I think that's very good for this country.
Of course, yeah, I should be answering that because I've been in Kampala longer. But do you think that permeates into the election itself?
I don't know. We have yet to find out. Of course, tomorrow is is the real day. Tomorrow people are going to cast their votes. Let's see what happens. But, you know, let's hope that, people will have the opportunity to cast their vote, vote for whoever is someone that they feel is the one they would like to see in State House or Parliament and what have you. And let's also hope that the Electoral Commission, which has been under enormous criticism, at the end of the day, will bring the sort of results that reflect the will of the Ugandan people.
That's a real test. And having been in Kampala, and I know my friend Morrison in the Washington studio, if he were in Kampala, he possibly would be campaigning, would be on the campaign trail now. Mm. And from the comments I've seen in Washington, there is a particular challenge that I'm looking at. The urbanized Uganda and the rural Uganda, with the reflection of an election. Uganda is having an election at which 5.3 million people for the first time are registered voters for a first time. You have 5.3 million newly registered voters who are between 18 years and 24 years, mm-hmm. 5.3 million people. Demographics, that age bracket is, according to Uganda Bureau of Statistics, about 83% unemployed. Does that become the momentous mass that changes the electoral tide? I don't know.
That could be the elephant in the room.
Well, that is one of those. But there is the question of peace and security, or as it were, that has lingered for the last 30 years. President Museveni has said peace, has sold stability, and said, oh, we have peace, we have stability. That against infrastructural development, that against other economic empowerment and development. And is that a factor that wins or loses elections in Africa?
Now, Peter, when you talk about peace, and I think it is generally referred to in the local language in Uganda,
yes.
But what about those?
We are sleeping a bit.
Precisely. But what about some who have been actually saying that peace is not necessarily the absence of war, but in fact it is the presence of social, economic justice, accountability, and reconciliation.
Which possibly have been here and there lacking in this and this. But you see, you're talking about a country that has been pegged to 5 years of destruction between 81 and 86, and the memory of that, that people are often reminded.
Uh-huh.
And that has become either the election. If you've looked at that, that is better.
Unfortunately, Peter, I am told that time happens not to be our best ally.
Yes.
And I have to ask Esther to take it away. Take it away, Esther, back in Washington.
Shaka, thank you so much. And now we return to our social media reporter, Mariama Diallo.
Well, thank you, Esther, and thank you, Shaka. Let's take a look at what's happening on Twitter, in our Twitter world, which has been absolutely exploding. Before that, a reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Uganda Elections. And if you haven't yet, please do follow us on Twitter. We can go to one right now. Speaking of it, we'll go to one from Linus Benezef, who writes, clearly, Museveni will come back to power. In Africa, do ballot papers decide who will be the winner? Well, that's the question posed by Linus Benezef. We have another tweet, this time from Talemwa, who expresses that Amamba Mbazi has a great support from the youth and elite class, which is the majority, he says. Another tweet from Silvanus Majura writes, if the election will be democratically free and fair, NRM will have to say goodbye to Ugandans. One last tweet will go to Martin Nialusi, who's wishing all the best to Ugandans in the coming elections tomorrow, of course. He also says that the youth should not accept to be used by politicians like a chewing gum. I think that says it all. We're going to now take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll talk about the beauty of Africa. From breathtaking vistas of the continent to its music, cuisine, and rich culture. Join guest host Esther Githui Ewart, a panel of guests, and myself as we discuss the beauty of Africa. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
A reminder that you're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll continue our discussion in a moment.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
And welcome back. Today, we're talking about the Uganda elections. Here in Washington, we have Morrison Rwakakamba, Merit Scholar and Fellow at Harvard University and CEO Agency for Transformation, and Dr. Suleiman Nyang, a political analyst and a professor at Howard University. Via Skype from Northwestern University is Moses Hesa, a columnist with the Uganda Observer and a PhD candidate at Northwestern University. Morrison, let me turn to you because you've been taking a lot of notes all through when Moses was talking, as well as when Shaka was being was hosting a little bit of this show in Uganda. What is your take? Because we had the debate, certainly an eye-opener for so many Ugandans. There were so many points raised, regional peace, stability, where do we move from here? What's your take in all this?
I mean, it's very interesting, and it's great that I saw my friend Peter Kibazo back in Kampala. He's on the ground and has been throwing these things, and Ndugu Shaka over there. But I really want to say that comment about intimidation, all the time everybody's talking about intimidation. But actually, if you look, at the supporters of all the candidates, whether it is President Museveni, whether it is Dr. Kizza Besigye or Amama Mbabazi or Abed Bwanika, supporters have been coming in droves, you know, to their rallies. And when you look at the demeanor on their faces, you actually see people who are enjoying themselves, who are enjoying this democratic process, and who don't appear to be intimidated. So this facade of that people are enveloped in fear, that people are intimidated, is actually not true. And in any case, why I continue to say that NRM remains very strong is also based on science. We have had around four polls, you know, since this electioneering process started in Uganda that are so empirical, that are scientific, and they have all put the NRM and President Museveni, who is the candidate of NRM, you know, above and on top of all these candidates. So I really don't understand what basis those who do believe that FDC or any other groups are going to win elections tomorrow. I really don't see the basis. Even in the convenience polls, whether it is on the social media that are not very well stratified, still put candidate Museveni ahead. So I really don't get, like I mentioned, the basis. I think Kisa makes this point about the Electoral Commission, and we all know that Electoral Commission, the Independent Electoral Commission, has been making reforms, has improved. Now you go online, you can check your name, you can check what Ugandans now call votability. You can be able to check your votability, your village, your polling station, your names, so you can go to the polling station, know that you are not disenfranchised, you are actually enfranchised, you're going to vote. Secondly, there are major reforms that conform to independence of an electoral commission. One of them is security of tenure of electoral commissioners. Apparently, much as the commissioners are appointed by the president and approved by the parliament, so meaning they are jointly appointed, the president cannot wake up and say, I am dismissing you commissioners, you don't have a job anymore. So that vests, that entrenches the independence of the Electoral Commission. So those who say that Uganda's Electoral Commission is not independent, they have not moved ahead to show the country or the world what constitutes independent Electoral Commission.
Morrison, yeah. I'm sure Moses will be reacting to that, but let me get to Professor Nyang because I need some level-headed here kind of analysis. Professor Nyang, if you look at the presidential debate, the issues that were raised, and people saying it was an eye-opener in Uganda, do you think this will change their decision as to who they will vote for? Does that influence anyone's decision as to what happens tomorrow?
No, I think if the dice is fixed, of course, the outcome is going to be very well known to those people who are playing the game. I would put 3 points with regard to the election tomorrow. Number one is the tenure of President Museveni. He has been there all these years. He has collected many IOUs. And many of the people who are running in opposition to him, he has IOU against them. But that's what is going to happen in the Gambia, for example, where the opposition people in the Gambia are trying, they are watching what's happening in Uganda right now. If the opposition wins in Uganda, and they know what some people are saying, that the dice is not fixed, and that, you see, even the president himself has not used all his power to intimidate, as some of the opposition people are saying. If he loses the election and he accepts defeat, like Abdou Diouf did in Senegal, many people thought that there were some Senegalese who died before that election. When he lost the election, some people died before the election. The big question really is, what I'm hearing from Shaka and his colleague is that it was an eye-opener. This is political science 101 for how people can learn to engage one another peacefully. If the politicians are able to have a dialogue, and they are willing to accept the results. That is the understanding. The opposition leaders, if they are defeated, they're not going to say anything. They just say, we try, but we lost. Well, and if the government wins, that's going to be the case. If the opposition wins, and the big question is, this is the big question, if the president himself accepts defeat, like Abdou Diouf did in Senegal, there were people who didn't want that to happen, but he accepted it. That's it. The big question is, concession after the election? That's the big question for the Ugandans.
Absolutely. And Moses, I'm sure you would like to react to what Morrison has just talked about. The Electoral Commission is said to be independent. There are critics who say there's no independence. And usually sometimes, as we see, the incumbents do have some advantages when it comes to the elections. Also, President Museveni, this would be his fifth term. He's been at the helm for 30 years. What is your take on what Morrison has talked about here and what Shaka has been discussing down there in Uganda?
Sure. Esther, before I get to Morrison, just quickly on what Professor Nyango was saying. Basically, in an electoral democracy process, what is important is the credibility of the process. Has the election been conducted in accordance with law, with the laws of the country? Have all the candidates adhered to the rules of the game? Is the body that is charged with managing the process competent, credible, and acceptable to all the players? Once that is sorted, the outcome is always neither here nor there. Whoever wins or loses, there is no questions to raise. You lose fairly and you win squarely. That's it. But let me come quickly to what Morrison was saying. You see, intimidation does not have to happen overtly, as Morrison would want people to believe. Intimidation can be subtle and covert, and that is what has been happening in Uganda. Mm-hmm. When a president says that he will not hand over power if he loses an election, what is that? It is intimidation at its highest level. He's basically, rendering the credibility of the whole process null and void, because what he's saying is that whether you vote me or you don't vote me, doesn't matter. What matters is that I'll not hand over power. About the issue of the Electoral Commission and the commissioners having a security of tenure, that does not in and of itself make the commission independent. They may have the security of tenure, but nevertheless, they are under the direction and the command of the incumbent party and the incumbent president. So all these problems are there. They are to play, and Morrison should face the issues squarely. I hope that he's talking about the same Uganda as I, because looks like he's talking about a different Uganda from the one that I know, Esther.
I'll give him a chance to think about that, but I'm supposed to return to Shaka now at WBS TV in Kampala. Shaka, over to you.
Thank you very much, Esther. And of course, we are back here with my colleague, co-host Peter Kibazo, host of Face Off and Issues at Hand program. You're most welcome.
Thank you, Shaka.
Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka.
And now we are joined, of course, by another guest, Dr. Livingstone Sewanyana, Director for Foundation for Human Rights Initiative. Profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you, Dr. Sewanyana.
Thank you, my brother, Shaka Sali.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Are you ready to vote tomorrow?
Oh, certainly. It's just a matter of hours.
What does it look like? You talked to a lot of people, obviously. Do you feel like this time around we're going to see a lot of people going to vote? Because, frankly, the history of the electoral process in this country, one would like to think that it's been generally been pathetic. Because the interest of people really has not been there. There has been political apathy.
I expect a high turnout tomorrow, mainly because of efforts that have been made to address the whole question of voter apathy this time around. For example, we have been running a campaign called Top Power. The campaign is all about telling Ugandans that don't give up despite whatever misgivings you have had. You have a right to determine your destiny. And secondly, candidates on their campaign trail have also been urging their supporters to come out in large numbers and vote. But I think beyond the two, what is most important is the anxiety around this. The mere fact that today we have a hotly contested election. On one hand, the incumbent would like to determine his future and his NRM and the future of the NRM, and therefore all his supporters would like to come out and make a case, as you have heard from Maurice Rwakakamba. On the other hand, the opposition are more, I think, more assertive than they have ever been before. There has been this myth for a long time in all our elections that the opposition does not have roots in the rural areas. This time around, I think this has been disproved. If you look at, for example, the rallies for the different candidates, for example, Honorable Mama Mbabazi, or you look at the rallies for Colonel Dr. Chiza Besigye, it was clear that wherever they went, like the case of the incumbent, they actually attracted crowds. And those crowds are not necessarily urban-based. They were also crowds in respect of rallies held in the rural community. So I expect people to really come out in large numbers because there is an issue at hand.
There is a saying that a lot of times in African politics or in a country like Uganda for that matter, when it comes to election, that people really do not vote for the message. Rather, they vote for the messenger. Is that the same thing that you have been able to see happening around here? Do people, in fact, vote for personalities as opposed to the issues they advocate?
Definitely. I think I agree with you to a large extent. There has always been that challenge that people, because of prevailing poverty, they tend to, you know, to succumb to, you know, voter bribery and all those things that go with that. But increasingly, there has also been this realization that despite the fact that, yes, you can get those inducements, it's important to vote with your heart. And I can see that all around. I head the Citizens Election Observers Network, a consortium of 18 national human rights and development organizations. And since September, we have been monitoring the exercise. We have deployed 1,250 observers across the country. We have issued 4 reports on the state of the electoral process. And it shows increasingly that people, despite the bribes, whatever, they are going to vote with their heart. They are concerned about the state of affairs. They want to determine their future, the quality of education they can have, the health care that they are entitled to, and certainly there is going to be a big decision that they are going to make. So it's partly true. Some people may succumb to the inducements, but I can see this time around an awareness that indeed the decision they make must go beyond the little gifts or inducements they get.
Peter, you have covered the last several elections. There are signs, in fact, indicators that a lot of people have been leaving Kampala, the capital, to go back to their rural areas to go and cast the vote. And in fact, even public transportation, they have hiked the price and what have you. Is this something that normally happens, or is it something unique this time around?
I think it is very unique, particularly this time, but it is informed by the nature of registration of voters that happened. A lot of people that registered for the national identity card registered not as voters particularly, but for the national registration or identity card, which by default also became the national voters card. So that has pushed people partly back to their rural areas. Mm-hmm. But it is also a passion thing. There's been penetration of the rural areas in Uganda, like Dr. Sewanyana says. For the first time ever, the opposition is traversing not the townships or municipalities that my brother Morrison Rwakakamba is talking about. They are reaching the heartbeats of the rural areas, and they are whipping up passion, they're whipping up a lot of love for either candidates. And this is a unique election, Shaka. I've been part of possibly 4 elections in this country that I've covered. All of them, voters receive from candidates. Dr. Kizza Besigye uniquely has run a campaign where he's been receiving from people. Today, I think at a press conference, they said they've received 90 Ugandan million shillings. They've received goats. They've received cows. That's a unique phenomenon in a Ugandan election. And that may speak of the passion of the voter. Whether or not that will actually get them to cast the vote is a different thing.
What about the issue of youth? The majority of the registered voters, the last time I checked, they're very young. They're below 35 years. And some of those that I have met, all of them frankly seem to want to vote for change.
That is interesting. Previous elections in Uganda have not been won by population demographics. They have been won by regional demographics. So you looked at where people are settled, are they rural or urban? This election largely seems to gravitate towards population and age demographics. You have 5.3 million voters that are fresh, that are new, they are young. They don't suffer the encumbrances of my generation that says, oh, there is no peace, there is no what. Those voters are not pegged to the peace of yesterday. They are pegged to jobs. They are pegged to social welfare. They are pegged to a living that they want to have that is better, that they see on TV, that they hear of their neighbors. They are not people like my mother.
Now, Livingston, I was talking with one of my sisters downtown Kampala today, and I was asking her whether she was going to vote. And she told me that she is not going to vote because it will be a wastage of her time. Why do you think my sister would think like that? That her vote probably doesn't really mean anything, doesn't count.
Of course, despite the excitement we have alluded to, there are still people who really feel that the outcome is predetermined. They are informed by several factors. One of these factors is the fact that some of them have voted in the past and they have been frustrated in the sense that the services have not been delivered, the promises have not been adhered to, and they just don't feel really necessary to go out and vote. Secondly, there are also people who really think that by virtue of what is happening, I mean, what we have witnessed, sometimes the conduct of the security forces, the strong statements that have been made by various candidates, the effect that, well, I will not hand over power or my business is not finished, they just don't feel like they need to go and cast their vote. It just doesn't matter. For the others, it is all about the conduct of the election. Do they really feel strongly that the process is smooth, fair, and transparent? These are people we just need to persuade. I hope my brother Shaka Sali, you will go and convince her that the stakes are so high that she cannot actually afford not to vote. I wanted also to add something to what my brother Peter said about the fact that people are increasingly interested in voting. One particular segment of our society this time around, which one needs to watch, are the elites. In previous elections, they hardly voted. I think that's one group that really has always abstained from voting. But this time around, I have many friends. I don't know whether, Peter, you have the same case. I have many friends who have never voted in all the elections we have had, but this time around, they're already traveling back home to vote, which tells you that this time around, the thinking is different.
Are Ugandans citizens or subjects?
Oh, that is a multi-million dollar question. Are they citizens or subjects? Ideally, they should be citizens. They belong to the Republic of this country. They should own this country. The power should belong to them. But in practice, they seem to be more of subjects, because it is all about orders, it is all about handouts, it is all about predetermined decisions.
You mean they do not believe that they have constitutional rights, inalienable rights, birthrights?
Why would one, for example, abstain from voting because he doesn't or doesn't feel that he has that right?
But you have a situation, for example, where President Yoweri Museveni, for example, says, I will not hand over power to my opponents because, in his view, they are not really equipped with the skills needed to run the state. He has been on record saying, my oil, my money, my army.
I think that speaks volumes as to whether they are actually citizens or subjects. Who actually determines? The Constitution of Uganda, Article 1, says power belongs to the people. So whose oil is it? So Uganda, it should be for the Ugandans. Whose power is it? It is their power. But then if the leaders don't think like that, then of course they subject them to a lesser position in society.
I think,
Shaka, on that, it is a question of civic awareness.
the more you build civic awareness, the more people are able to stand and stamp their foot and reverberate against whoever leader. If the leaders realize that the citizens are unable to stand up for what they believe in, the leaders will occupy that space. No political space is granted. It has to be struggled for and earned. And I think in this particular election campaign, a lot of Ugandans are earning their space, they are stamping their foot. And I think slowly, it may not come today, but certainly there is space that has been earned, and the leaders will think again before saying, I totally own this space.
Perhaps beyond the whole question of civic competence, which he raises, we also need to take into account the poverty. You know, when people
you have 1 minute,
even when they are conscious of their rights, sometimes they behave differently. They behave as if they don't own. So that also militates against the ability to own and to make decisions and to assert
in
themselves.
In Uganda, the unique thing, it is the elite that are fairly more empowered, that are more subservient, that feel they actually are subjects of the state. They are earning, they are receiving arms from the state. It is the poor ones that stand up.
What about the issue of intimidation? We're talking about the police. We're talking about some elements within the military. We're talking about crime preventers.
Sure. I think the whole question of intimidation and harassment is real. Some may think it is perceived, but I think it is real. What happened, for example, on Monday is quite regrettable. I do agree that candidates must adhere to the rules of the game. But that doesn't justify, under any circumstance, any disproportionate use of force, even leading to loss of life. When people see life being lost, then definitely they get disempowered.
Well, I'm afraid, gentlemen, time happens not to be our best ally. So on that note, I would like to thank my co-host, Peter Kibazo, host of Face Off at Issues at Hand program here, WBS Television, and Dr. Livingstone Sewanyana, Director for Foundation for Human Rights Initiative. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Take it away, Esther Washington.
Thank you very much, Shaka. Quite an eye-opener. We hope for the best in Uganda tomorrow, a peaceful election. And on that note, thanks to our Washington guests, Morrison Rwakakamba, Dr. Suleiman Young, and Moses Hisa, who joined us from Evanston, Illinois. Special thanks to our affiliate, WBS TV in Uganda, for hosting the Uganda portion of our broadcast. It's been a pleasure working on this collaboration. And to all of our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Buddy. On behalf of the Voice of America, thank you for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. Good night from Washington.